All right. Good to see everyone. I see God has once again hooked us up with the weather of the Pacific Northwest. So enjoy. we are doing the cookie thing, and I just wanted to highlight Brittany Acosta is a art teacher. And so what we're doing as we're going door to door is we're saying basically sorry for parking in front of your house. And we're a church over there. Here's some cookies. And then we're asking people if they want to opt out. We're giving people cones to put in front of their house. And so Brittany, I think she might have conned some of her students to help us make these. So thank you to Brittany Acosta and her art class. So let's say thank you to Brittany. And please do stay after and meet some of our friends who are doing some great work in the city. And we'll have some great food here. All right. So we've been in a conversation for the last few weeks, and the conversation is basically this. So if you've been with us for a while, we end each of our services, we say thank you for being with us, and then we say go now and live the church. And so what we've always said is the church isn't something you go to or attend. The church is something we live together as. And so over the last few weeks, we've been talking through, so what does that mean more specifically? We've been in Romans 12, and we've kind of talked about the motivation behind it, and then how that motivation informs us at the same time. And then last week, Jason walked us through this beautiful vision of living as the church together and trying to do that and understand each other's strengths and weaknesses. And so I'm going to kind of wrap up this conversation this morning, and it'll be kind of what is our posture to the world around us? What does that look like? So historically, people have called that missions. People who do that are called missionaries. And so this morning, I thought maybe we could start. When you think of churches and missions historically and missionaries, what comes to mind? So just turn to a neighbor and share some of your thoughts, all right? Missions, church, missionaries, what are some things that come to mind? Go. All right. Let's hear some of these things. What do we think of when you think of missions, missionaries? Traveling overseas. Okay, good. Anybody else? Telling people they're wrong for what they believe, okay? What was that? White people, okay? Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Rice? Is that what I heard? Okay. Anybody else? Life? Okay. Good. Murder? Mm-hmm. So... this morning, we're going to talk about missions and missionaries. And I think, like a lot of us, when we hear that word, we have a visceral response away from it. A lot of us do. I think I have in the past. Because of not just because of some of the beautiful things that throughout history the church has done, there's been a lot. But we've also, if we're honest, there's been some huge gaffes. And sometimes we want to distance ourselves from that. This past week, I had an experience like that. There's a pastor of a well-known church on the West Coast who posted this picture on his Facebook. And it's a picture of the Red Guard. And it was Mao used it during his regime as propaganda. And this is what he wrote under this tagline. He said, "The typical attitude of our staff as they start work each day." So I think what he was going for was that our church has a mission, right? I get that. And I think what he was going for was, look at her, she's smiling, and we're happy about our mission, right? And unfortunately for him, the Chinese community has a different response to this picture. This picture represents for the community, and very close to my family, 40 million people in the name of a cultural revolution that were killed, raped, tortured. My own family, my father lived in the southern part of China during this time. They were middle-class landowners. The only thing they had of value was their land. So when the Cultural Revolution took place, the regime was like, all right, we're going to take everybody's land. My grandfather was like, well, that's all we have. We want to keep our land. And then they're like, okay, we will kill you. So he took off. He had to flee on foot. My dad had 9 brothers. Out of the 10 boys, they all tried to escape. Half of them made it out. Half of them didn't. One of them was killed. 3 of them were imprisoned. One of my uncles swam out. My father escaped on foot. At night, he would dig up graves to hide in it. And so when he posted this in the name of a mission, I had this really strong reaction and a response to it. And for me, it actually wasn't that big a deal that he was ignorant of this history. That's okay. But this was his, he posted a response to the Chinese community's reaction to this. I have the quote up there. People often miss irony on the internet. It's a joke, people. If you take this seriously, you really shouldn't be following me. Did you know that using Hebrew ironic humor, Jesus inserted laugh lines, jokes in the Sermon on the Mount? The self-righteous missed them, all while the disciples were undoubtedly giggling. And then a lot of people started posting. Next slide. Pastor, you're such an inspiration to us. That was funny. You people, whoever they are, need to get over yourselves. You don't get humor. We can't seem to say anything funny without offending because these days in our PC society, etc. And so I think for a lot of us, when we hear mission, when we hear missions, when we hear churches, we don't know what to do with that. And so I thought this morning it would be a great conversation for us to have together as a community to say how can we at least strive to have a healthy mission? I think the response isn't to not have a mission. I think whether we articulate it or not, we all have a mission of some sort, right? Some of us is self-preservation, expansion, growth, success, comfort. So I think we should have a mission. And maybe we can have conversations about what does a healthy mission then look like. And then let's strive and work together as a community to do that. And so this morning, we're going to finish up in Romans 12. And in those last few verses, it gives us kind of healthy parameters, I think, for Vox in our mission forward and our posture to this world around us. So if you want to turn to Romans 12, just to kind of give you a background that we gave the first week. So Rome was the largest metropolitan city at that time. It was about 1 million people. The church started with this community of minorities in the Jewish community. There was about 50,000 of them. Within that 50,000, among 1 million, the church formed. And so what happened was an emperor came to power. He was anti-Semitic. He kicked all the Jews out. And so it was gone. And then the church became this remnant of a diverse community because it was kind of the main metropolitan city. So they formed their own expressions, their way of worship. The emperor dies, the Jewish community moves back, and then they now have this blended church, and they're trying to live life together. And so this is a letter to them, and if you want to read Romans 12, 14 through 21, we'll walk through it together. All right, Romans 12, 14 through 21, go. All right. So in these few verses this morning, this is what I want to do. I want to basically paint a picture of our strategy and philosophy behind our relationship to the world around us. I think for a long time, Vox, we were clear on what we didn't want to do. And I think it's time for us to kind of put some words in formulation of, okay, we know what we don't want to do, but how do we do this in a healthy way and do it well? All right. So let's pick this up in verse 14. So he starts out, and then he says this, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. So that's the scene, okay? That's the context. Within that, then, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn, live in harmony with one another, do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of a low position, do not be conceited. So this is what he's saying. So in that first verse, he's saying, bless those who persecute you. The word persecute there is the word dioko. So it literally means someone who's pursuing you, chasing you to harm you. So maybe one way we could put it is maybe someone who is different than us, who is an other, someone who has different values to an extreme. So in that case, you have a value of not being hurt. They have the value of hurting you. Okay? So let's just say in that context, what is our posture to the other, to people who have a different worldview, people who see the world differently? And this is what he's saying. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. He's saying in that situation, engage them with empathy. If they're trying to hurt you, live in harmony. Do not be proud. And then come at them. If they're harming you, come at them with a low, in a place of humility. Don't come back with strength. Come back with humility. And I propose that this posture of empathy, if you engage this one principle into the history of the Western Church in the last couple of centuries and in our posture to the world, it changes the entire narrative. If people, think about this, if people came instead of pity, instead of conquest, instead of colonization, if they came with empathy, it's a game changer. And I propose that that's our posture to the world. I don't think we can determine what everyone's expression of mission looks like, but I think we can ask ourselves, how does empathy play out in our lives to the other? And then in our expression, whatever my calling is, as a doctor, as an orthodontist, as a teacher, as an accountant, as a poet, as a painter, as a photographer, how does empathy play out in that calling? David Foster Wallace gave this beautiful commencement speech in 2005 to Kenyon College. And you need to read the entire transcript because it's gorgeous. But his whole point is this. He's saying to a class of graduates, you know, you're calling out of the higher institution. You're going to be thrown back into real life. And your real life isn't going to be great. You're going to be sitting in traffic. You're going to be in lines in the grocery store. And it's going to be frustrating because we see ourselves as the center of the universe. And then he gives an alternative, and he paints this beautiful picture of empathy. So check out the clip.
That I am the center of the world, and that my immediate needs and feelings are what should determine the world's priorities. The thing is that, of course, there are totally different ways to think about these kinds of situations. In this traffic, all these vehicles stuck and idling in my way, it's not impossible that some of these people in SUVs have been in horrible auto accidents in the past and now find driving so terrifying that their therapist has all but ordered them to get a huge, heavy SUV so they can feel safe enough to drive. Or I can choose to force myself to consider the likelihood that everyone else in the supermarket's checkout line is just as bored and frustrated as I am, and that some of these people probably have much harder, more tedious, or painful lives than I do. Again, please don't think I'm giving you moral advice, or that I'm saying you're supposed to think this way, or that anyone expects you to just automatically do it, because it's hard. It takes will and effort. And if you are like me, some days you won't be able to do it, or you just flat out won't want to. But most days, if you're aware enough to give yourself a choice, you can choose to look differently at this fat, dead-eyed, over-made-up lady who just screamed at her kid in the checkout line. Maybe she's not usually like this. Maybe she's been up 3 straight nights holding the hand of her husband who's dying of bone cancer. Or maybe this very lady is the low-wage clerk at the motor vehicles department who just yesterday helped your spouse resolve a horrific, infuriating red tape problem through some small act of bureaucratic kindness. Of course, none of this is likely, but it's also not impossible. It just depends what you want to consider. If you're automatically sure that you know what reality is and who and what is really important, if you want to operate on your default setting, then you, like me, probably won't consider possibilities that aren't annoying and miserable. But if you really learn how to think, how to pay attention, then you will know you have other options. It will actually be within your power to experience a crowded, hot, slow, consumer hell type situation as not only meaningful, but sacred, on fire with the same force that lit the stars, love, fellowship, the mystical oneness of all things deep down.
You can watch the rest yourself. And he paints this picture that basically this is what Paul is saying. And in the early church, they were this tiny little community and possibly the most important city in the world. And through empathy and through humility, they changed the city and the world around them. And I feel like if we just ask this one question to whatever we're engaged in, it changes everything. And so I think we've been learning this over the last few years. We have our friend Evan, who's in Afghanistan, and we're going to hear from his experience. So let's welcome him up here. So maybe can you, for people who aren't familiar with when you were in Afghanistan, what you were doing, can you just kind of share basic information?
Sure. So 6 years ago, Good and I had a contact in Afghanistan. They invited us out for a trip to help them teach a computer course, which our ethos behind that was we don't really do vacation trips on church money, but if it's sort of the prologue to a longer story, it's worth investing in. So we went over, came back, decided I would go back and join the team for longer term. So, so I went back and joined them in a rural context, and pretty much right as I got there, there was a kidnapping. So me and another guy were on the hostage negotiation team, finished that up, came back, lived with Dallas, moved back again, and I was there for about 18 months the second time. And during that, I just spent a lot of time learning language, learning culture, and then got into some work with a publications department where we printed sort of positive books for the Afghan audience.
Could you maybe share then your initial expectations going in and maybe what your actual experience was like compared to that?
So I think that in the West, even if we aren't the kind of people who believe in like white horses and that we can go save everything and that people need us, we're still influenced by what I call humanitarian porn, which is like 5-minute clips of, you know, a Range Rover in the desert and all these happy kids and all this stuff. There's no lead up to any of those scenes. There's no aftermath. We don't talk about what the locals actually think once we leave or what's keeping those systems in place, if it's just the military from some other country or whatever. There's nothing surrounding that. And so I didn't realize the depth of the reality until I was there. And I'm actually still piecing it together. It was really hard to get work done because the government wants their fingers and everything to try to get as many bribes out of you as possible. There's all these religious holidays all the time. There's Ramadan, which makes everyone tired and cranky. And then there's bombs and the Taliban shooting RPGs into your boss's yard and all this stuff like that. So it's really hard to get things done. And it's not invisible children, those kind of videos all the time. So over there, without a really strong community, it was an incredibly depressing experience sometimes.
What are some things then while you were on the ground there that maybe you learned? And I know a lot of it you're still processing and trying to figure out, but what are some things that maybe, or people that you met that you learned from?
Well, I would say the biggest thing that I learned was language and culture. So I spent 9 months just doing that. And like by the end of my experience there, I had to pull ID out to show people, to prove to people that I wasn't Afghan, even after I would start speaking English to them. I just kind of adapted that mindset and therefore was able to understand when people were talking about different aspects of their lives. I think I did come out, with a lot of empathy for people, but again, in the context of a lack of community and you hear just war stories all day, it was pretty difficult. I do have two or three friends I'd like to talk about today, though. This is Aref, and Grace met him when she was visiting me. He was actually our first translator for our kidnapping case, and we stayed friends for the next, up until today. He runs an NGO, locally run, and they do, they basically promote debate culture through tournaments and education surrounding debate, with the idea being that if people can learn to open up to truth or open up to different points of view without resorting to violence or shutting down or just quoting a book at you or whatever, then they'll be more open to learning about what we really have to tell them. So he's a believer, and his ultimate goal is to share the gospel. But to do that, he's opening up people to just the idea of talking without kind of going crazy. And actually, there's a local TV stations want to do like a American Idol type reality TV show on his, like using a debate tournament for the competition. So it's pretty cool. Next up, and then you can go to the next slide too. These two guys lived with my friend Duncan, who some of you met. They lived at the same property as he did and worked with his NGO. This guy here was one of the two hostages from 2010. And so we stayed friends. I lived right next door, and I would hang out with these two guys two or three times a week and just play chess and talk about their struggles. They don't really fit in the box in terms of Islam, and so they're, yeah, just had a really good time with them, just talking about culture and what they're going through, and yeah.
And would you say that work of empathy that you learned there has kind of translated to what you're doing now here in Austin? And could you maybe explain what you're doing here in Austin?
Sure. So I've got a great opportunity to work for Mobile O's and Fishes. It's an amazing organization here. And what I do is I manage microenterprises that provide homeless people with dignified income opportunities. So Workshop, Street Treats Bikes, some of you guys have seen those. We're working on other microenterprises as well. And surrounding that whole deal, there's a lot of business and running errands and things, but I do get to spend time with people a lot. And in building a stable opportunity, there's kind of, we plan things together, you know. And the homeless folks that I work with play just as big a role as I do. And yeah, so I get to visit people in the trailers they've been lifted up to through Mobile O's and Fishes, and if they're sick, I get to go and hang out with them, bring them medicine or freezer bags to make ice packs, and just hear their stories of addiction and struggle and family, and so it's, yeah.
And so you won't be out there afterwards because you're down at Pecan Street Festival working. But maybe could you share a little bit, if people want to get involved or get to know kind of roads in the program, some ways they could do that?
Yeah, so Stephen's garden program, Genesis Gardens, has a lot of volunteer opportunities, more so than my program. But I'm always open to giving tours pretty much any time of our model park for the 27-acre master plan community we're building for the homeless. So I can give tours anytime. Like Gideon said, Pecan Street Festival, we have a booth selling the workshop products. Yeah, so we've got birdhouses, tree swings, some jewelry, some cards made by a woman who was born without arms or legs and lived on the street for a long time. She has the ability to make really cool art, though. And so those are all for sale. And all, as with all of our microenterprises, all the profit goes to the craftsmen or artists who made the good. So.
Thanks, Evan. Let's say thank you. And so I feel like empathy is something we're learning as a community. I think we've learned through Evan's experience, and we're still learning. And I pray that whatever work we are called to, that we'll just ask that question. And the word empathy, there's actually a theological word for it. It's called the incarnation. It's kind of the foundation and core of what our faith is. And that's the narrative that we're welcomed into. That God comes to this earth and he empties himself completely and comes not in power, but comes powerless and then walks among us and then gives his life for us. And in the resurrection, we're now invited to be the hands and feet of that same thing to the world around us. There's this quote here from Augustine of Hippo. And he said this in 420 AD, that man's maker was made that he, ruler of the stars, might nurse at his mother's breast, that the bread might be hunger, that the fountain might thirst, the light sleep, the way be tired on its journey, that truth might be accused of false witness, the teacher be beaten with whips, the foundation be suspended on wood, that strength might grow weak, that the healer might be wounded, that life might die. And I think he beautifully captures empathy in what theologians call the incarnation. All right, let's keep going here. So in verse 17, he's continuing in this same theme, and he says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful what to do, what is right in the eyes of everyone. So he's saying, engage evil with grace. Right? Don't engage it with justice. Don't give them what they deserve. engage it with kindness and mercy. And then if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So the word there, peace, the writers in scripture, there's this word that they're associating with, which is shalom. And so peace is more than the absence of conflict or violence. It's God's vision for the world, how things were supposed to be. So the word live in is actually one Greek word, and it's actually better translated as cultivate. So he's actually taking a gardening metaphor, like a farming metaphor. And so you picture you have this piece of land that's just ravaged and broken. And so there's weeds and there's glass. It's kind of like the parking lot you guys are parking on now. We had to get it ready, right? And so cultivating it, there's two parts to it. One is kind of the cleaning and the weeding. I would call that the going into injustice and engaging it. But if you only do that, you only have an empty lot. And so someone needs to say, what's God's vision for this place, this space? And how do I plant some flowers and a garden and a rock bed and some landscaping? And then for us in our call to ask those questions, what's God's vision for my workplace? What's God's vision for this neighborhood? What's God's vision for what's happening here that's not just? How do we engage that? So we live in a world that even as children, right, our first engagement is we understand that the world's not fair. I remember when my kids were younger, we were driving up to Dallas one time, and we were going to a wedding, and we were running late, so we picked up some fast food. And then as I was grabbing it, the guy behind the counter with my two kids' meals goes, "Oh, sir, the toy is for this month is a truck. What color toy would you like?" And so at that point, I was like, okay, do I like give them the same color or different colors? So as a parent, which would you have chosen? Same color or different color? Same color. That's why you're all better parents than I am. So I was like, oh, yeah, let's get a yellow one and a red one. Yeah, that'd be awesome. So for the next 3 hours of Dallas, it was hell. I was in a box of hell on I-35. And so Noah was three at the time, and he starts, and he was like, "Oh, that's not fair. Joshua, the yellow truck. Yellow trucks are better." Right? So he's going on for like 20 minutes. So I can't take it, and then I go to Joshua. I was like, "Hey, dude, your brother wants the yellow truck. Like, listen, he's three. His brain's not fully developed. Just give it to him." Right? So he gives it to him, and then Joshua starts. He's like, "That's not fair. I started with the yellow." So like back and forth and back, and I'm just like insanity in a box. And then an hour of this, Noah pipes up again, and he goes, "I want the red truck back. It's not fair." And so at that point, I just snap. I turn around. I was like, "Fine, nobody gets a truck." So up until this point, they're completely divided. Suddenly they unify, and in unison they go, "That's not fair." And I go, "Well, life's not fair," right? And we get that. And there's this posture to our world that it's not fair. And what Paul is saying is, in whatever is unjust, whatever is no longer shalom, whatever that's not peace, enter into that, and with your gifts and your education and your talent and your call, and then cultivate peace. And some of us, it'll involve weeding, and some of us need to figure out what's the picture, what's the vision of this garden in this peace here in this time. And so I'm going to call Stephen Hebert up, and it works out well because his work is literally cultivating a garden. So let's welcome him, Stephen Hebert. So Stephen's with the same organization, but he's doing a wing, you can sit up here, called Genesis Gardens. Could you explain a little bit about what that is and what you guys do?
So I've talked a couple times at Vox, and we started thinking we were a food program. So we started gardens all over town. We were in backyards and front yards and empty lots, and We grew food, and the idea was we're going to grow this food, we're going to sell at the farmer's market, and our product is going to be food and jobs. And then we started that, we tried that, and what we found was something about the garden has this amazing ability to showcase talent and creative, creative abilities, and what we call homemaking. So Genesis Gardens is part of the Community First program of Mobile Loaves and Fishes, which, as Evan said, we're building a village on the east side of town for about 250 people. And in the context of that village, there's going to be a garden program that's going to be an engine at the heart, which is showcasing and refining and promoting the homemaking capacities of the most extremely chronically homeless people in the city of Austin. So, like, the people that you say are sort of beyond repair, those are the people that we're using to create this new community that people like yourselves, volunteers, are coming into and are seeing and learning about their own capacity to be at home, to be at rest, to be in shalom and at peace. And it all kind of starts with the garden and all the beautiful things that God created in kind of an organic environment so that it's all working together.
Could you tell us maybe specifically what some of those things are? There's a garden, I think there's bees, there's chickens. And then maybe could you tell us a story from someone in your community?
Awesome. So very specifically, we get a table out here with a whole bunch of sign-up things. Vox is going to be strategically partnering with Mobile Loaves and Fishes for the next year. And an area that we would love for specifically for Vox to get involved in is every week starting in November here at Space 12, probably on a Wednesday night, we're going to have small groups from Vox come out and partner with us to wash and bunch up all of our produce, which all of the produce, we no longer sell anything. We decided, like, why are we selling this food at the farmer's market to people who don't really need food instead of giving it to the people who are, like, the most hungry and the needy and have the most diseases and the most challenges, you know, with their health. So we're now washing and bunching all of that to return it to feasts that we do on a bi-weekly basis out at our model park. Or we distribute it, go door to door and say, hey, here's a bag of produce. And by the way, how's it going? You know, do you need anything? And then using that food as an opportunity to build a relationship. So distributing that food, that's a volunteer opportunity. Preparing the food, including harvesting fish from our tilapia aquaponic system, or maybe down the road, harvesting chicken, harvesting honey from our bees. And of course, working the garden. We work the garden on Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, and Saturday morning every week. And those are volunteer intensive events. And what we're doing over on the east side of town doesn't work unless the city of Austin embraces what we're doing. And in the garden, we think that the best way to embrace the homeless is not to look in their eye and say, what's wrong? You know, it's to do an activity together, something that's probably somewhat foreign to both of you, and then to get to know each other while you're doing it. You know, and in that context, you can build relationships over a more sustainable relationship over a longer period of time. So we've got, you'll hear about through the small group program, the thing we're going to be doing on Wednesdays. And then we've got signups for all the other things. And if you sign up, you're not actually saying you're going to be there. You're just saying you're interested. And then we'll send you more information about those. I got one story. You got to give me this one. So I was praying. Gideon told me he was going to talk about shalom and cultivating, and I wanted to talk about this idea that I taught a garden class a couple of weeks ago, and I was like studying for this garden class, and the garden class, part of it was on weeds. So weeds are like these terrible things, right? That like take over your garden, and they're like terrible. Well, it turns out not. It turns out every weed's got a purpose. And if you understand the weeds, then you're understanding what the purpose of those weeds are and what they're actually doing to your soil. They're either fixing nitrogen, or they're breaking up the soil, or they're holding on to the soil, keeping it from eroding away. And then there's this one weed that actually tells you that your soil is beautiful. Your soil is amazing. Lamb's quarter. Anybody ever heard of lamb's quarter? Grows up. You'll see it in various places in Austin. I did my internship at Boggy Creek Farm up the road here, and they had lamb's quarter growing, and you know, one of the best organic farms in Austin. So It's really interesting, this lamb's quarter. I feel like I'm this weed, and I found, you know, my seed kind of going out, and then whenever it fell into this soil, you know, this really good soil, it grew up, and it, like, all of a sudden it found its healthy place. Well, I'm driving down from my house the other day, and I look underneath the overpass of 183 where all the homeless hang out, and I see lamb's quarter growing up. Because you never know where the good soil is. And you were talking about callings earlier, and I had no intention at all of being a missionary, of being among the homeless. That was not my life's goal. But you never know where God's calling you, and that seed goes out, the whatever it is that you've got inside of you, and you fall into that soil, and when it's the right soil, you'll come up. And to me, that was just God kind of letting me know He had. You know, I'd found my shalom, and I want to create a place where in the soil that all these different things are working together to create, like, this flourishing environment. And so whether it's you or a homeless person, we want to create a flourishing environment for everybody in the city.
Thanks to you. And I won't brag, but I'm kind of good at growing weeds. It's kind of my thing, actually. All right, let's just finish here then. Then he finishes verse 20. It says, on the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. So if that person, the other, if they're hungry, feed, just do something. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, and so that's kind of been the point these last few weeks. You can't just go to a church. It's not a passive thing. It's something we do together as the church. And I think that Vox needs to hear this because we're a somewhat cerebral community. It's really easy for us to hear issues of poverty and hunger, and we can postulate forever. We can hear someone's hungry, and we're like, well, Noam Chomsky had this awesome lecture. Let's sit down and listen to it. Let's download these essays, and then let's dialogue. Maybe we should bring in some statisticians, and we can run the numbers. Let's run the numbers, then we'll get an economist, and then we'll put the essay in the economist and the statist, and we can do that forever. And those things aren't bad. I think those are good things if it leads to, in the end, us feeding someone who's hungry and thirsty. And I think that's our hope, and that all of us will engage and live as the church. James says essentially the same thing, and he says like this. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Or we would say it, if someone claims to go to church but doesn't live as the church, can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes or daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, in the same way just going to church by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. Show me your faith without deeds. I will show you my faith by my deeds. Then in the next chapter, he postures wisdom in the same way. And I think it's really interesting because I think we're cerebral. We want knowledge. We want to understand how to use the knowledge. And he says this, who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds. Show your wisdom by deeds done in humility. But the wisdom that comes from heaven, he says this, it's peace-loving. It loves the idea of cultivating shalom. It's peace-loving. And then he finishes, peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. And so I'll just finish with this. So what is our overall strategy then at Vox? Okay, I think a lot of churches traditionally have said this. Outsource your mission to us. We will hire some professionals, we will sit in a room, and then we'll strategize, and then we'll come back out and we'll say, all right, this is our mission for this year, everybody jump in. So throw money towards it, throw your time and your energy. And we've chosen a different route. For us, your mission and your call is too important for us to do it for you. You need to do the hard work of wrestling. What has God called me to? Why am I here in Austin at this time? Why do I have these gifts and these talents and this education? And so our overall strategy is this. So I think I have a chart here. So this is the world to scale. Just kidding. And then go to the next slide. So our hope is that every single one of us will have an expression, a plot of the garden, and we'll be living the church in some way. Okay? So Kelly announced that, if you go to the next slide, our Good Neighbor Fund is to come behind you. If you have an organization, if you are living in a way that needs some financial support, turn in an application. We will support your expression of living the church. We will do our best. So the application is there. Last year we had the budget and it wasn't fully used. That's ridiculous. We need to do it. Just use it. Put in applications. All right. So that's the first part of our strategy. So just go back to the last one. So we get that not everyone has figured it out. That's okay. I think it takes time. If it's too valuable for you to rush into it. If it takes you decades, that's okay. Take your time. But while you're trying to figure out your own call, maybe you need some practice space and some opportunities to engage in. We've chosen a few people here at Vox who are living the church. So go to the next slide. You've heard from Stephen, Genesis Gardens, Rhodes, Evans Program. They are expressing their mission. We're going to come behind them and support them. And so if you're looking for a volunteer opportunity, it's win-win. You get some practice space, and then we're supporting one of our own. Our posture then to the world, so we've wrestled with this. We're like, how do we know we're supposed to be engaged in the world, but we're not convinced that the world needs the American church. Church in Afghanistan is doing great. Church in China is doing fantastic. But what do? We don't want to ruin what they're doing. We need to still be participating. So this is our posture. If any of you, if anyone who's a part of Vox feels a call of living the church, some of us will be in Austin. Some of us, if you go to the next slide, will be in El Salvador. We'll come behind you. We will support your expression of the church no matter where you are in the world. If you go to the next slide, we've got a team. Johnny's one of our own. He's been in leadership. He's expressing the church in India. We're going to come behind him and support him. But this is not outsourcing your call of mission. This is to supplement it. And my prayer is that in 15, 20, 25 years, that we'll have stories littered around the city and this world of our expression of the church. And so I just want to highlight our two kind of global partners, and then we'll finish up. So there's a clip from Katie. Check it out.
Katie Johnston, or Kathy, as people call me in El Salvador. I volunteer with an organization called U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities, which is a solidarity organization. There's communities in the United States that have had a relationship with communities in El Salvador since El Salvador was in a war in the 80s and early 90s. And we do work in rural development, advocacy, and sort of global education and making people around the world aware of what's happening in a tiny little country like El Salvador. One of the big things that I've learned from the church is from the history of the church. Church leaders educating their congregations. They did a lot of literacy. They started giving people Bibles. They started doing Mass in Spanish instead of Latin. This whole movement came out of that. They just sort of talked about what Jesus did. And it was self-evident, like, well, we have to do this. We have to organize. We have to demand our rights. We have to support one another and work to defend human rights. That sort of like no nonsense response to who Jesus is and who we are in the world is something that I've really taken away, and something that the church there is still doing. Gang violence and delinquency is a huge problem in El Salvador, and so the church is struggling with that. So I live in one of the communities that we work with. I sleep in a hammock, and I wake up with the sun and the roosters. And I mostly work with the youth and sort of mentoring some of the youth leaders and helping them sort of just boost their youth. They have a youth committee. And helping boost like the activities that they do. It's very meaningful just to live side by side with people. You know, my family grows corn and some other crops, and I go out with them and I work in the fields and I go over to people's houses and I have coffee and I go swim in the river with people kind of just hang out with people and have relationships. We're very blessed living here in Austin, and we can get very comfortable. And when you're comfortable, your eyes tend to close. I think the first thing to do is just to open your eyes and to, if you're comfortable, to figure out how to be uncomfortable.
All right, and that's Katie. Yeah. So this Wednesday, there's going to be a dinner if you want to find out more, if you want to get some coffee from El Salvador and be more a part of that community. Please do that. And then our last partner is in India. And so because of our new articulated strategy, we've actually had a partnership in India since we've started. But we reevaluated, and the relationship, it's a beautiful church there, but our relationship with them is kind of patriarchal, and none of you really have a relationship, and we're just giving them money. And we said, well, this doesn't really fit in with our overall strategy. And it was a hard decision for me to make. These are friends of mine that I'm close to. And so when Johnny moved, we said, we're going to come behind his expression of the church. And he's connected to an art space there that's very much like Space 12. And so these coming weeks, Waylon, Constance, Hannah are going to go and kind of close up our partnership in Chennai. And we're going to give them one last gift that hopefully they can start a small business with, we're hoping. And then we're going to begin the new partnership with this art space. And our hope is down the road that we can bring artists from India, we can host shows here, and some of our artists can go there as well. And so we're going to invite Waylon, Hannah, Constance to come on up, and then we're going to pray for them. So. All right. So Hannah, you leave today.
Yes.
Waylon, when do you leave?
October 9th.
Okay. So I'm going to pray a commissioning prayer. It's the same prayer we prayed for Evan when he went to Afghanistan. It's the same prayer we prayed for Johnny. But as I pray for them, I'm going to commission them and all of us. This is my prayer for us as a community, that we will leave these doors week in and week out and live as the church. And so let me pray for them and all of us. So how many times, O God, have you used what is foolish to shame the wise? How many times have you used what is weak to shame the strong? How many times have you used what is low and despised to bring down the mighty and the high? Slaves from Egypt, shepherds in a field, a teacher on a cross, a church in an empire. Where shall we look next, O God? Grant only that we, your church, shall know your voice when we hear it, shall recognize your work when we see it. Keep us open to the truth we have not yet seen, but save us from boredom with truth we have seen clearly and often. And this morning we pray particularly for Hannah, Constance, and Waylon as they head to India, in our entire community here in Austin, as we wrestle with our call this day. Help them and all of us to trust less in human cleverness and more in your wisdom and grace. Let our deeds grow less out of panic and more out of prayer. And when we have grown humble and honest enough, will you use us who are weak to manifest your power as you did through Christ Jesus? And we pray this in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. So let's give him a hand, and we'll pray for you guys. So we encourage everyone to stay. We're going to have great Indian food, talk to Stephen, pet a chicken, and it's going to be a great time.